very much. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land that we're on as well. This is me reimagining the health system. I thought that's probably what I look like when I reimagine a health system underneath the tree of knowledge. I must admit to feeling a little bit of imposter phenomenon here. I look around the room and there's some very eminent names that I know from my reading and occasionally bumping into on Twitter. I'm one of those strange and frustrating people called a general practitioner. And also, I think now it's legitimate to call GPs the general physicians of the community, because general physicians are a breed that's reducing in number. And my focus in reimagining the health system very much comes from my perspective. My questions already have demonstrated that I'm not a health economist, and this presentation will demonstrate that even more comprehensively if there was any doubt. I'm reminded we all come from, you can tell my accent, I'm British, and this country is massive. I still struggle to get my head around that. But we still talk about it as a sort of a single country, and we, in my field of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health, we talk about that as if it's one thing. And I think acknowledging the sort of the diversity that we have, and actually the different countries that we have across Australia, is going to be crucial, and that health is, has a sense of place about it. And I'm going to come more to that as well. It set me thinking, what is a health system and what do we want it to do? And possibly, I suspect what I want it to do is to keep people healthy and to help people when they're unwell. But that's a big box to unpack. Again, my work in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health is the focus on that has been a human rights approach to health, which I think is really important, because that means that people have a right to be healthy that's purely dependent on them being human. So it doesn't depend on the fact that they make an economic contribution or not, or that it's cheap enough to do it. That makes it vulnerable to being expensive. And we see the effects of that when people, former prime ministers, for example, say that people make a lifestyle choice and therefore we can remove services like water from remote communities. And human rights, I think, is crucial. We're already seeing a move away from that in the field of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. And I think that's where I come from in looking at this. I'd also like to ask you, what is health? And you will all recognise this definition. You can probably recite it in your sleep. I would argue that any health system that we invent should actually use this definition, which is the Aboriginal definition of health. And it has some of the same concepts, but you'll see that it's, take notes, much less individualistic. So you're only healthy when you're in a community. And it's about achieving full potential as a human being and includes death in the life-death life cycle. The other really important thing in that is that there is no mention of disease. In the WHO definition, you have to have an absence of disease and then an extra sprinkling of well-being. On the Aboriginal definition of health, you can have diseases that we treat, but still be healthy. And I think if we're using that definition, then the sorts of treatments we offer and the sort of perspectives we have are different. Treating, for example, depression doesn't just become about applying antidepressants and psychology to an individual. It's what's happening in your community that causes it. Now, we all know this, but that definition takes us there. Where does health happen? This is a 1961 paper, I hope you all know, a classic paper, The Ecology of Healthcare. It was updated in about 30 years later, where they re-examined the figures, but the conclusion of that was things haven't changed much since 1961, so I'm going to go back to 1961 because it's a simpler diagram. Essentially, out of 1,000 people, 750 have symptoms or an illness each month. 250 visit a healthcare, primary care practitioner. One of them ends up in a tertiary care centre. We've heard today how that's where much of the training's done, that's where all the expense is done. We need to focus healthcare on that sort of area. If we're actually going to improve people's health, it needs to happen where people are. if we're only improving the health of that bottom right corner, we haven't made much difference. The other important thing, though, if we're going to apply it to everyone, is the inverse care law. Now, you all know about the inverse care law. That's a picture of Julian Tudor Hart, who's a hero of general practice, who's a GP in Welsh coal mining village. He was the first GP in the world to know the blood pressure of every single one of his patients. He did not do a single health check, not one. He did it because he knew that over the period of a year, 2 years, 5 years, he would see everyone in the community because they would present with health problems. And as a part of doing that, he'd measure blood pressure and cholesterol. We call this anticipatory care. In Australia, GPs see about 83% of the Australian population each year. So if you want them to do public health and improve the health of the population, that's where the rubber meets the road. I can't think of any other organisation that possibly does that. Maybe Woolworths or Coles. Good luck getting them on board, I'm not sure. Woolworths, they're in too many pokies to want to do anything about this. But the inverse care law means that those other group of people who aren't attending are the ones who need our services the most. Now, my feeling is that any health system has to get to grips with that. The people who are okay, who are well off, they'll manage whatever system we create. They'll navigate their way around it. Those who struggle, that's who we need to build a health system for. Sort of people like me who think, now what would work in a health system, the sort of people who aren't struggling to access a health system. By definition, we're employed, we have an income, we have a computer at our desk, so we tend to think, health checks, internet access, driving to places. People don't make it there. The other important thing, this is data from Glasgow. We worry about the aging population. Black line is the richest 10% of the population. Red line, poorest 10% of the population in Glasgow. This is multimorbidity when you have two or more chronic diseases. It comes in 10 to 15 years earlier in the worst lot. Which means that, and I read this and thought, that's my work in Aboriginal health. When we talk about the ageing population, we're talking about the sort of conditions that people have age 60. We're talking the sort of conditions people have age 45. Health system has to grapple with that. It's complex. People in those circumstances have a complex mix of physical, mental, and social problems that need managing. Now, the person who did that is another hero of general practice of mine. This is Graham Watt in Glasgow, who's sort of a successor to Julian Tudor Hart. And if you don't know the GPs at the Deep End theory, you go and read it. It's about the GPs, the practices in the 100 most deprived communities of Scotland. And they looked in depth at what their experience was of doing this. And some of their conclusions, one of the most important ones, take time to deal with that comorbidity. So in Australia, 25% of GPs work in the richest areas, 11% in the poorest areas. Patients in the poorest areas can't afford co-payments, so how do you survive your practice? High throughput. How good is that for dealing with complexity? It's rubbish. So a health system needs to incentivize care that takes more time, that allows you to spend longer with patients. I have that luxury where I am in Aboriginal Medical Service. But my colleagues working outside that sector don't. And sometimes we have to dig our heels in and say, this is what we need to deal with the problems. This is Barbara Starfield. And again, talk about the medical home. When practitioners are focused on diseases and their management, they focus less on the spectrum of problems that people face in dealing with their overall health problems in daily life. If we're building a system that focuses on diseases, all the statistics about diabetes, about obesity, about heart disease, it's really important, but if we're focusing our system on those, we're failing people. Consistent message from Barbara Starfield. Then she writes, the ability to focus on patient-defined rather than professionally defined health problems accounts for the benefits that accrue to patient health, population health, and equity in health within and across populations. I just think that's really important. And essentially, healthcare isn't HbA1cs and EGFRs and cholesterols and blood pressures. It's, can I dance? Can I carry my grandchild across the car park? Can I keep working? Can I look after my elderly mother? That's what people will care about. In Mount Isa, we asked Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people about what the cultural barriers to care were. Non-Indigenous people said yes, we need posters and pamphlets and policies and procedures. Aboriginal people said, we just want a relationship with someone in the service. And I think that's my fundamental take-home message, is that we need to focus on relationships. This is actually my bookshelf, part of the bookshelf. And in primary care, there's all the stuff about epidemiology, and there's the immunisation handbook over there, and there's the Murtagh's General Practice and Gray's Anatomy, you can see there, and a public health reader. But here is Valence, who was a psychoanalysis writer in the 50s. Here's Trish Greenhalgh, another hero of general practice, this one actually. And in that book, a book of public health textbook, she's got chapters on literary theory, on psychology, on and that plays into the way we interact with patients, and that's really important. Homeopathy works for rheumatoid arthritis in rheumatology, but not because of the homeopathy, but because the clinicians have time to talk to their patients. The consultation process has an impact on patients' outcomes. So in designing a health system, we need to do that. GPs see people quickly, but we have evidence-based treatments. Homeopaths see people slowly and have treatments that don't work. How good would it be to allow GPs to have consultations that work with treatments that work? And a health system that allows that to happen. This is another paper that talks about allowing those sorts of things to happen, about speaking positively yet truthfully about the therapy being prescribed. I won't go through all of that. Bottom line, take me to an AMS. The sector that's doing this most closely, obviously I'm biased, is the Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Sector, run by the community and employs people like me to provide healthcare. We need to find a way of basing our health system on relationships, not transactions, so that it's not about how many blood pressures did you do, how many health checks did you do. It's about, can you name someone in the service, name someone in the service who you have a relationship with, who you want to go back to, who you trust, who will guide you around the service. One of my patients came in to see me. She's sort of regularly refused treatment by other services. She's loved in our service, not easy to get on with. She came in to see me for a corn on a foot shaving off. I hate feet. Don't like doing that. She turned her down the corridor to the podiatrist. But I did it, and I shaved it. And as I was doing it, she disclosed something that she'd never disclosed before about being raped at age 11. You don't get people try me out. They'd say, do they have a pain with their toe? I deal with that all right. They'll come in with the headache. 3 weeks later, they come in with their abuse. All dependent on the relationship. We allow that to happen, we have healthy people. And I think the final message is we all agree in a patient-centered health system, but what does that look like? And my contention is that the patient-centered health system is sensitive to people's stories. The K10 questionnaire finishes with, and how often have you felt worthless in the last 2 weeks? And they answer that question, I give them a score of 24. But no one will come in and, Beyond Blue will never run a series of advocacy saying, look at what people's K10s are. It's stories that matter to people. And a health system that can't cope with people's individual stories is not managing patients. And so my ideal health system, reimagining it, will be based on relationships, not transactions, and would incentivize that, and would allow care to involve people's stories and experiences.